This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Wong Shaoning and Noel Lim. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Tuesday the 28th of January, and we're coming off of the Chinese New Year weekend. How did your weekend treat the both of you?
Well, it was a series of eating, a bit of sleeping and a bit of running as usual for me.
You still managed to go on your run?
Of course I did. I went on my run on the first day of Chinese New Year and on the third day of Chinese New Year. And there was no one on the road at all.
Understandably, because I'm sure they're all sleeping off a food coma.
Yeah, but you need to run to work off that incredible food coma. I kept thinking, how many tarts did I eat? How many kueh kapis have I stuffed my face with?
I think you should just stop counting.
It was like so many, and I thought, I think I need to run for the next 4 hours, you know, but it's not going to happen.
What about you, Noel?
Well, yesterday I was at Mid Valley Mega Mall, and it was so crowded. And if there's any evidence of a slowdown in the economy, I don't think so. Not by judging by the number of people that were in Mid Valley. And after a while, after like 4 hours, I thought to myself, okay, I think it's time to just go home because you shouldn't be spending too much time with the crowds too.
Yeah. So this is something that I was also on the third day or yesterday. I considered leaving my house, but I considered it for about half an hour. And then I actually called around to some of my local cafes and like, are you open today? Are you crowded? And every single one of them said, yes, we're very crowded. So I was like, okay, looks like it's time for me to stay at home and drink my tea then.
Yeah, it's actually what I've noticed is really KL is no longer quiet, guys, at all. Everyone's come to KL to celebrate Chinese New Year. So instead of getting, like last time you used to go back to Ipoh or Penang, I think everybody's just descended or just staying on in KL.
Or they've just gone overseas.
Yeah, or they've just gone overseas. But, it's still nice. Chinese New Year is still a good time to celebrate with your family, catch up with some of your old classmates, people that you don't normally see in a year or so. It's actually really cute. I like this period a lot, especially, of course, collecting the ang paos.
Yeah, so we still do have another 12 days or so of the Chinese New Year period. So likely there will be more reunion dinners to be had. But in the meantime, we're back to work this morning and we've got lots of things lined up for you today. What do we have on our list to talk about?
Well, I think the first story is, how will you measure your life? Clayton Christensen, Harvard Business School professor, he passed away on Thursday. Quite a notable professor, and I think we'll talk a bit about his work.
And we'll also be talking later about the art of mergers and acquisitions, how to go about it and integrate two different companies in the best way for everyone involved.
And of course, this whole Chinese New Year, there's been a lot of talk about the coronavirus and we can't escape it. But the main thing is to, how can we keep calm and carry on?
And if you want to weigh in on all these conversations, remember you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now, though, we have some music for you. Here's Walking After You by Foo Fighters, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Shaoning and Noel. Now, a question when it always comes to this time of year is, how do you measure your life when you look back on it, right? A lot of us get kind of sucked into the whole working experience, and everything tends to be about how best to benefit your company, how best to improve your working careers. But a lot of the one thing that gets overlooked is the fact that a lot of strategies which can be applied to the business environment can also be applied to the personal environment as well.
Yeah. So this title, "How Will You Measure Your Life?" I think it's notable. Made notable by this professor, Harvard Business School, Clayton Christensen. He passed away on Thursday due to cancer. A very famous professor. He was like somehow in my consciousness when he wrote the book Innovator's Dilemma. I think he was well known for advising Intel, and how Intel, Andy Grove, who invited him to give a talk, and how then Andy decided to launched Celeron, which is a low-end processor, and that was the idea that he got from Clayton's talk. And also, he also advised the Clinton administration, and then it also triggered, changed the way how they fought terrorism. So this was some of the ideas that you know came from him. So really, I think when we talk about how will you measure your life, how do you apply some business ideas, it's also, most importantly, is how do you allocate your time to what really matters? Because you allocate your time to energy to what is most important to you. And then he says it's very tempting to go for the shortcuts, for the short-term results, go for what has the fastest payoff. And he said that's understandable, especially for people who go through and do their MBA in Harvard Business School. You know, you have to pay back that huge debt that you took on for your master's degree. So there's always that tendency to be short-term. But he says you have to be long-term in your thinking. You need to have some sort of vision. And so avoid that marginal cost mistake, which is about thinking short-term.
Yeah, but I like the article also points out to the three questions that he always asks his student. And that is whether they are happy in their career, whether their relationships with their spouse and family is the enduring source of joy. And third one is whether what they're doing is going to keep them out of jail. I know the last one kind of sticks out, but that's because he had classmates who actually went to jail. I mean, and I think that's more whether you have your ethics with you, right? Whether you will go down the path to make decisions which aren't legal, you know, which become illegal or unethical and then become criminal. That's his point. Which is, I think these three questions kind of are really good in like kind of a check on your life, right? That you should constantly ask yourself all the time. Because if you can't answer any of this in an affirmative, something must be wrong. Something fundamentally is wrong, isn't it?
Yeah. Another thing that this article in the Harvard Business Review looks at is, well, first of all, it tells the story of how he advised Intel, right? And one of the things that it says was, you know, as he was talking about all the different business models that he had and, you know, some of the experience that he'd observed, one of the questions that kept coming back was, okay, but how does this work for Intel? How does this work for Intel? Mm. And rather than saying, oh, okay, you know, Intel would benefit from this, he actually said, actually, no, give me another 10 minutes to completely explain what this thing that I'm talking about. And maybe make your own conclusions.
Yeah, he didn't want to give them the answer straight away,
yes.
Right?
And this is something that I think is probably something that I observed when I was going through the education system, which is that I think quite a lot of Asian countries, the skew tends to be towards giving people the answer. Okay, you know, what do we do about this? Well, you do A, B, and C. There's kind of no, what do you think you should do? Because when you ask that question of what do you think you should do, you are triggering that critical analysis, right, which can be very important as you move into other stages of your education and career.
Yeah, so I have his book, How Will You Measure Your Life? It was given to me by a former colleague in BFM. So some of the things I learned, in fact, in the first few pages, he talks about this book is really about teaching you how to think rather than what you should think. And that sinks into the point that you're trying to make. And I have to say, that book has influenced me in a few ways. So like, you know, think about what is the job to be done in your life, what is your job in a relationship. And if anything, you know, our show Spotlight, which is going to have one now, it's once a month in the last week of the month. Today, we're going to have it. So Spotlight was actually, in a way, was how, using some of Clayton's ideas, like how do you, how do you accelerate innovation in an organization? How do you cannibalize something, do things differently?
Yeah, so this is something that I think it's worth asking these questions that Professor Christensen puts forward, particularly this is something that a legacy of his that will no doubt endure past his death, his untimely death. But do let us know what you think about this. You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Right now we are heading into a few messages, and then after that we'll be taking a look at the art of mergers and acquisitions. In other words, how to integrate companies and employees. So be sure to stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Flashlight by Parliament, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Noel and Xiaoning. Now, when it comes to mergers and acquisitions, it's kind of like a marriage, isn't it? You know, you two companies or two separate entities merging their finances, their communities, and how well that works depends on how quickly you conduct that integration and how far you take it, right? So there's this article in the Financial Times looking at exactly this. How far do you take integration of companies, to especially when it's, you know, the dreaded merger of equals, and how quickly do you do it? Because there has been some research to say that actually, you know, when a lot of companies, even though they have done a lot of research into how best to integrate and acquire another company, a lot of acquirers actually do underperform at the end of the day when they actually go through with their M&A.
Yeah, I think, you know, before you do it, you always think, oh, okay, there must be some synergistic benefit. Otherwise, nobody will do it, right? So, you know, one of the things that everyone will look at is, hey, let's look at the cost savings, right? If we merge these two entities, how much money can we save? And then it's about economies of scale. So you become a much larger animal. I think that drives a lot of acquisitions. And also it's all about inorganic growth, right? Because mm-hmm. you realize that maybe you've hit a brick wall in terms of how much you can grow on your own. So one way of getting market share is buying your competitor's market share. Now, after all that's been done and dusted, right? Okay, yes, you achieve your cost savings. You've got that economies of scale. You've got your return on equity that you so desire. I think then comes the really hard part about integrating the human beings. And that's where the problem lies, right? Because you can do the accounting. You can get your bean counter to come in and count every single bean and, you know, say, okay, let's close this, let's close that, let's integrate this, let's integrate that. But how do you integrate human beings? That's the difficult part, right? Because I have a set of style of working and you have a different set of style of working. And maybe we've been doing it for 10, 15 years. So it's going to be like almost a clash of cultures, I think, sometimes. And that's when you really find out whether there really is synergy in an M&A.
Yeah, in the short term, I think the low-hanging fruits are the cost-cutting measures and what's very visible and tangible. And then who is also going to be in charge. All that is probably quite easy now. But yeah, you're right, there's cultural differences. And I think much also depends how similar the business is and how regulated they are. Because if they are more regulated by, you know, like a regulator, then their processes, chances are quite similar. So then you might find an easier integration. Like, for example, the Big Four accounting firms, when after the Enron case and Arthur Andersen had to be broken up. So I think that integration was fairly easy, though without some hiccup, some hiccups. But can you imagine it'd be much tougher for some companies like, say, Google and Amazon merging together? That, you know, obviously would have, you know, a lot of differences. So culture is one thing, and then some of the nitty-gritty stuff like leveling pay scales. You know, some companies the might be paying differently, and how do you level that up? And that is the hidden cost, right? That is what you cannot really measure immediately when you do your valuation before you merge or you acquire a company. But of course, you know, M&As are good because it's, sometimes it's a chance to just get rid of dead wood.
It is. But I guess it also depends on the kind of industry that you're in, right? Because this article mentions two particular names, Disney and Pixar. And the Disney-Pixar merger, that when Pixar was acquired by Disney, and I think it was 2006. And it's an interesting sort of case study because obviously, in Disney and Pixar, they're very creative industries. But when they merged, they actually kept the two studios separate, almost entirely separate from each other. They didn't force these two companies and the company, the staff, to work together immediately and share ideas immediately with people who had for a long time been their rivals. Instead, what they did was that, okay, you know, you can source for information and you can source for ideas from the people over on the other side of the aisle, but you don't necessarily have to. You can continue with your work as per usual. And I think that was how they managed to avoid what they call disruption anxiety, which is what happens a lot in mergers and acquisitions. Because no matter how synergistic you perceive the joining of two companies to be, that synergy may not necessarily be felt on the ground. And it is, at the end of the day, people are creatures of comfort, right? You know, you've been doing something, as you said, Shaning, for 10 years. Even if, you know, your job description on the after post M&A is going to be exactly the same, there are going to be a lot of uncertainties that come into play as well.
Yeah, in the case of Disney and Pixar, because they are creative industries, mm-hmm. and creative people need a certain kind of environment that they thrive in, and this they have to minimize that sort of disruption anxiety.
Absolutely.
Well, then I'm looking, of course, I have to look at the share price, right? Because another another company they cite is Anheuser-Busch InBev.
AB InBev,
right? They took over Budweiser to be one of the largest companies in the world. And I'm looking at their share price over a five-year period because it's actually down from a high of 123 euros to a low of today, 68 euros over 5 years. So not every M&A, I'm sure there are reasons why the share price declined, but not every M&A does lead to a sterling share price performance, clearly. So I guess you do need to do work your sums and understand the culture before you proceed.
Well, let us know what you think. Is a faster integration better or a slower one between companies? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We are about to head into the 6:30 news, but first, here's Home by the Sea by Genesis, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was This Life by Vampire Weekend, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Shunning and Noel. Now, over this weekend, the news that has overshadowed most Chinese New Year celebrations has been the news coming out of China about the Wuhan coronavirus. And there's been a lot of social media messaging happening, some of which of dubious origin. And the Malay Mail has an opinion editorial in it that came out yesterday, written by a number of concerned doctors. So this op-ed includes names like Tan Sri Dr. Jamilah Mahmood, who was one of the founders of Mercy Malaysia, and also Dr. Kor Swee King, who's a public policy specialist, and whom The Bigger Picture will be speaking to today later on the Daily Digest at 2 o'clock to talk about the handling of epidemics and how to prevent the spread of infectious diseases. But the important thing about this op-ed is that it basically encourages people to act responsibly. And this is not just directed at government officials, it's also directed at you and me, you know, media officials as well as people on the street when you share information about the Wuhan coronavirus. Because we've seen news reports coming out this morning that the Health Ministry Director General is asking people to, you know, not to share fake messages.
Even MCMC can.
MCMC has come out as well to say that, because this is one of the things that actually is much harder for governments to address, panic that can be created around outbreaks like this.
Yeah, so obviously check the source of your news before sharing it. If it's too sensational, it is probably fake. And if it's only one media source carrying it, and if it's a dubious sort of a media source, that's that you probably should double check that piece of news before putting it on your Facebook or even on your Instagram.
Yes, don't wait until someone like me slides into the family WhatsApp group to debunk everything, because that's what I've been doing over this weekend, to say, you know, just addressing all of these reports and forwarded messages.
Forwarded messages are the worst.
They really are.
Yeah, I think people shouldn't add to the panic, you know, because I think we also must put everything into context. Yes, unfortunately, there are people who are dying, and we know the number is 80, and the number who are infected are as high as maybe close to 3,000, 2,800 plus this morning.
I think there are another 6,000 under observation.
Yeah, so it is something that is very serious. But there's also, as role, as a Malaysian, our role is also not to add to that chaos and to that panic, right? Because I think we should, and this is the part I think I'm guilty of, we should have faith that our health ministry and all those that are involved, whether it is the doctors at Sungai Buloh or any other hospitals, they are trying to do their best to contain this virus. So we shouldn't be creating sensational news just for the sake of it, you know.
Yeah, so I think I look at a lot of these conspiracy theories that are floating around as a result of this Wuhan coronavirus. And I have to wonder, why do people come up with this? And I think it's the same as any kind of discourse with people with anti-vaxxers, you know, people against the vaccine movement. It comes from a distrust of the government, of the mainstream media,
of the health system.
It comes from this feeling that, oh no, people are hiding things from us, and we are maybe in more danger than we realize. Therefore, we have to spread
paranoid.
You know, we get paranoid. The problem is that you don't know for sure that information is being withheld from you. But what we do know is that there are people on the front lines, healthcare professionals, nurses, doctors, medical staff, who are trying to treat this problem. Public policy specialists who are trying to figure out ways best to contain this issue to protect the Malaysian public, and spreading false messaging can actually make their lives a lot more difficult because they will also have to deal with panic stations at home, in addition to trying to manage, say, the entry of people from the Hubei province into Malaysia. And even that is not necessarily the best solution, but perhaps it's the one that is best available to them right now.
Yeah, with all this fake news, it creates a lot of anxieties, especially the families of the victims who are, you know, who are either seeking care now. And then, you know, that might interfere the work of medical professionals who are actually putting their lives at stake, right? Being on the front line. I guess on my part, I was looking for a hand sanitizer, and apparently that has run out now.
Masks as well.
Yeah, so I have to keep looking for hand sanitizer. Of course, I'm traveling, and so I'm a little bit worried, I have to say that. But I guess we'll just have to, take care of ourselves, keep a good hygiene, stay away from crowds.
Exercise necessary precautions. And there is a good article in Foreign Policy, in the Foreign Policy magazine, written by an AFP correspondent, Hector Retamal, talking about how he has avoided infection over the course of covering as many as 30 outbreaks. So if you want to take a look at that, do head on over there. And we are also going to be talking a little bit more about this with Dr. Suresh Kumar Chidambaram, a consultant infectious disease physician at Sungai Buloh Hospital later on at 7:15. So if you want to know more, please be sure to stay tuned for that. Right now, we're heading into a few messages and then we'll be back to take a look at social media as well as the front pages of the papers. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Trying Your Luck by The Strokes, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Shouning and Noel. Now, this morning, taking a look at the front pages of the newspapers, quite unsurprisingly, border security is the front page of The Star, because as the coronavirus has expanded its reach, Malaysia has now stopped issuing visas to Chinese travellers from affected regions, particularly Hubei province. So tour and travel players have said that this is going to be impacting their bottom lines, but at the end of the day, it's human lives that matter the most. So the first five pages of The Star are dedicated to articles on the coronavirus.
Well, I'm looking at the New Straits Times, same thing. We have this coronavirus on front page. And this headline here, most patients will fully recover, says expert. Most people affected by this coronavirus, or Wuhan coronavirus, will recover from the disease. And this is according to University of Malaya Tropical Infectious Disease Research Director, Professor Dr. Sazali Abubakar. He said unlike SARS, the mortality rate was much higher, was I think something like 10%. Well, so far the mortality rate of SARS. But for the coronavirus, so far, it's only 3%. But I think maybe it's still early days.
Yeah. Well, the Malaysian Reserve, because there is no HDL today. I think they're on vacation. So for the Malaysian Reserve, because I normally get all the business papers, right? So the Malaysian Reserve, the headline is Higher Dividend Anticipated from Tabung Haji. It's an article about their ability to give a better dividend as a result of an asset surplus that stood at 2.3 billion ringgit last year. But the question is, should they? Right, because we know that in the past there are issues and there's still an outstanding, I believe, special purpose vehicle fund that they have to worry about that is due, I think, in 7 years' time, whether that can be fulfilled. But in the meantime, how should Tabung Haji manage its money? How should it kind of, what kind of dividend payout should it be giving its the pilgrims who invest in it? I think these are the questions in the article, and maybe something that we might talk about later this week or even today.
Indeed, and also just taking a look as well at the front pages of the Malay papers that we have, Sina Harian and Harian Metro. Both of these have also gone with headlines about the coronavirus, about the suspension of the visas, as well as just generally what's been happening over in Wuhan. Because we did see reports coming out over the weekend and over this Chinese New Year period that we did have some cases detected detected here in Malaysia. So that is what I think prompted these fears that, Malaysia is going to be seeing an outbreak. But ultimately, as we were saying earlier, the important thing is to, if you do receive messages about the coronavirus, to double check and verify the source of the message. Because this is something also addressed in The Star on page 5. Social media being, and here they use the word, infected by fear and fake news.
Yeah, I think also, and if we look at it from a market perspective, business perspective, I don't need to remind anybody that actually this year is Visit Malaysia year. So unfortunately, not a very auspicious way to start our tourism campaign. And we do know that over the last few years, Chinese tourists have been really, that's the big growing market for everyone, not just us, but also Thailand, the rest of Asia, and also even in Europe and the US. So the question is, how is it going to impact businesses and economies just in Malaysia itself? Because we were targeting, 30 million arrivals. And even if the Chinese stop traveling, the rest of the world is also in this kind of, should we travel, should we not travel kind of question mark in our heads, right? So, you know, we'll really have to watch and see what's going to happen.
Yeah, already, you know, when we talk about the slowing global economy, travel is a luxury, right?
Yes.
So you talk
it's
about the fact that
it's non-essential,
it's
right?
It's non-essential. So travel is going to be hit, one of the ones things hit first, much less now with the fears of an outbreak.
I think for Malaysia, they're targeting like 3 million tourists from China this year with some promotional campaigns lined up. So I guess that they're going to be rethinking that now, that target. But I have an experience being quarantined before.
Really?
Yes, I travelled to Singapore during the SARS outbreak, and then when I came back, my employer said you need to be quarantined, so I was put on a graveyard shift. It was fun and not fun, I guess.
Oh, so your employer quarantined you?
Yes, quarantined. So, you know, it's not just about travelling. Then you come back, you might be quarantined.
All right. Well, that is all that we have for you, though, from the front pages of the newspapers. But don't go away. We'll be bringing you more analysis and news after the 7 o'clock bulletin. So be sure to stay tuned. But first, here is Rocket by Smashing Pumpkins, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.